story of spirit from the quiet place. The Stones of Lateo, Gifts of Spirit. Halfway up the mountain, to the east of the river, there was celebration. Circle after circle after circle ignited when touched with the ceremonial torch wielded by each circle master. The clearing was ablaze with crackling branches and bark and pine needles. Whatever the weary pack could gather in their arms or carry on their bodies was thrown onto one of the fire sites. There were 13 fire circles in all, each tended by a group of young braves, no more than 8 years of age, all competing to make a fire that would roar to the sky and send smoke billowing to the heavens, and challenge the clouds to break open and drop rain to fill the rivers and streams so the fish would be plentiful and the game well fed. One by one, the boys fell to exhaustion as the flames climbed high above the clearing into the night sky. Lateo, who had led the third circle in the successful challenge, was the last to surrender to fatigue. Then, as the night air took on the chill of the mountain, he laid on his back with his comrades and watched fire sparks flutter in the dark. It was summer, and Lateo was well hidden, his belly pressed against a boulder, and his knees dug deep into the sand at the edge of the water. His chin rested on a patch of moss that was fixed to the upper surface of the rock and still damp with the dew of morning. Lateo watched every motion of the bear's claw as it plunged into the water and drew out a fish. Lateo did not move until the bear had eaten its fill, and the cubs had finished off all but the bony scraps that were quickly snapped up by the interloping blue jays. Then he moved only to study the water and the currents beneath the surface of the river. Snow was packed and hard and covered with a sheet of ice that gave with a muffled pop beneath his feet. Lateo walked alone beneath the trees, watching the eagle soaring overhead, leading the way. The destination of the bird was unknown to the young brave, but he followed just the same. The eagle cut and rode a thermal to a peak high above Lateo. The boy's eyes followed the winged scout until the glare of the afternoon sun forced him to avert his gaze. That is when he spotted the opening in the rock face of the mountain. The inside of the cave held no fascination for Lateo. His heart was in the wind and the trees and the sky and the river. But the spirit of the mountain called. Lateo stepped through the craggy portal and entered a chamber of echoes and shadows. Immediately, he noticed the sound. It was only water dropping from the low-hanging ceiling into pools gathered on the floor of the cave, yet it reverberated through the underground tunnels, each melting droplet announcing its joining with a drawn-out plop. Slowly, Lateo's eyes adjusted to the shadows. The cave was not in total darkness. Lateo occasionally caught a glimpse of light, filtering in from above, which kept portions of the cave visible. The underground pools of water held life, and the walls of the cave sustained colonies of lichen unfamiliar to Lateo. There was more to see, but Lateo was not prepared to explore the innards of a mountain. So the quiet cave held fast its secret for a time longer and watched as Lateo made his way back to the entrance and rejoined Upper Earth. But Sabo, the elusive spirit of the cave, reached out and touched Lateo to make sure of his return. The spirit of the cave had found one worthy of her secret. Hot rocks held the fire encased within their boundaries and kept the inner confines of the bear hides warm. Lateo watched the shadows dance on the wall of the stretched skins until his eyes began to close. His breathing was slow and steady. When he saw the form, he sat up with a start. At first, he was not sure what manner of apparition was before him. Closer inspection assured him the evening visitor was female and full. Although not an earthly woman, Lateo knew that which sat before him was a female spirit. The spirit's clothing appeared to be transparent, but revealed nothing. And, even though the flap was tied tightly against an invading night chill, the spirit's garb was waving gently, as if caught in a summer breeze. Her hair was not the black luster of the women he knew, but a deep chestnut color, tinged with golden hues that glowed in the light of the tent. Her gaze was downward, never looking to the right or to the left, never revealing the color of her eyes. Her frame was slight and fragile and transparent. Strangely, the delicate creature had a demanding presence that required Lateo to rise, which he did. Then, he wrapped himself in a boiled blanket and waited. Lateo did not attempt to speak to the visitor. After what seemed to be a very long time, the silence was broken. "I am the spirit of Cave Chetaltok. I am the spirit, Sabo. I have come to entrust to you the secret of Chetaltok. I have lived millions of lifetimes in and around the cave. I have watched and waited for the worthy one, for the one worthy to be entrusted with the secret held in the veins of the cave. For the time of the collapse approaches, and soon the entrance will be sealed to all except the chosen one, the keeper of the secret. That one, the one who wears the mark, will say to Chetaltok, 'Hite, Chetaltok, hite!' And Chetaltok will open his veins for the worthy one to take what is needed. For, as it is intended to be, the worthy one will take only what is needed for the good of all. In that manner, the veins of Chetaltok will not be ravaged. In that manner, Chetaltok will make his contribution to the One and sustain other times and other peoples and other races. Chetaltok is not to fall into the hands of those filled with avarice, for they will rip open his veins and pull the life from the mountain." Lateo listened intently, the echo quality resonating in her voice reminded him of the water sounds he associated with the dark interior of the unexplored cave. He did not realize why the spirit, Sabo, was speaking these words to him until she looked up for the first time, and he beheld emerald green rays shooting from her eyes. No words were exchanged between Sabo and Latejo. No night sounds were noticed in the emerald realm between them. There was only the echo of the cave and the sound of heat held by the rocks within the confines of the stretched skins. Sabo slowly reached up, touched her hair, and pulled a single strand from her head. The abruptness of the motion startled Latejo. He noticed that although extracted from a mass of chestnut hair, the solitary strand glowed and began to take on the qualities of a woven chain of gold. Then, just when Latejo's eyes were satisfied that it was indeed a golden chain in Sabo's outstretched hands, the glowing rope leapt into the air and was held suspended before him by two brilliant shafts of green light emanating from Sabo's eyes. Each end of the golden chain wound itself around an emerald shaft. With a quick snap, the streams of green brilliance were severed, and the chain fell to the earthen floor of the wickiup. Latejo looked down, but made no movement toward the object at his feet. Rather, he slowly raised his eyes to meet those of Sabo. Her eyes no longer blazed, but were still an amazing color of green, and settled on his with intense scrutiny. Her words were barely audible. "You are a man of spirit. Your path is true, and your intentions pure. All those gathered at the edge of the woods know you are worthy. All those gathered at the edge of the woods know you will guard the secret of Chattletalk and use its treasure for the good of the One. All those gathered at the edge of the woods know you will not destroy their world in the name of greed or your own notoriety. So, before the time of the great upheaval, there was called a great joining of all the spirits in and around the mountain to discuss the passing of the secret. Because all those gathered at the edge of the woods know the treasures of Chattletalk are not to be lost." The thought of tending to the welfare of an entire mountain seemed a daunting task to Latejo, and his anxiety did not go undetected by Sabo. "O man who walks with spirit, do not be troubled by my words, for your very reaction to this knowledge shows your heart and soul to be pure. Do not worry that you are worthy. Those gathered at the edge of the woods could not have chosen one more capable, and the task will not weigh heavy on the heart of the pure. Pick up your gift without concern, Latejo, for the gifts of spirit will not curse the course of man." So, Latejo bent down and gathered up the gift from spirit. When he stood, he was alone. Latejo looked at the gift resting in the palm of his hand and watched the chain of gold become a band of rawhide and two glowing green gems change to smoothly veined stones. Latejo studied the band of rawhide and the two stones resting in the palm of his hand. He wondered what type of trickery had transformed his gift of gold and emeralds to rawhide and rocks, and although he was not saddened to be relieved of such finery, he was puzzled by the alteration that had taken place before his eyes. As if the spirits heard his unspoken question, each end of the rawhide band wrapped itself around a stone, grew taut, and popped the stones in half. revealing a multitude of green veins held within each stone. Plateo studied the vein pieces of each rock and listened as he heard Sabo's voice in his ear. "Return to the mountain, Plateo. Return to the mountain." Then, each stone slammed shut, reforming the two smoothly veined rocks, and, to the mystification of Plateo, he was left holding the golden chain. But now, attached to the woven chain of gold, were two emerald green medallions. Plateo waited for another manifestation, but nothing happened. And, as was the plan of the spirits living in and around the mountain, the rest of the night passed without event. For the next 3 days, torrents of rain pounded as if herds of wild stallions were thundering over Plateo's head. And during these days of rain, Plateo did not leave his home. Rather, he sat in a trance-like stillness, hoping to hear more from Sabo, hoping to gain some insight of what was to be from the world of spirit, hoping for a sign to show him the way. It was not a conscious decision to pick up his golden chain, but it was in his hands all the same. It was not a conscious decision to wear his gift around his neck, and as he slipped the object of spirit over his head, he wondered how it had come to be joined at either end to allow him to do so. As it touched his hair on its way to his shoulders, he felt a calmness settle over him. A feeling of knowing. On the fourth day, the rain subsided. Plateo stepped from his shelter. The melting snow released its hold on the ground that was now visible and no longer hidden in white. The air carried the sound of the melting snow, and Plateo recognized the signs of the approaching new season. It was time to go to the mountain. He carried with him only a flint knife, pieces of rolled bark, and a few chunks of dried fish, and he thanked the spirit of each for accompanying him on his journey. The gift of spirit Plateo wore around his neck emanated energy, a vibrating force generated warmth encircling his body, making a bearskin unnecessary. Plateo was deep in thought when he left the clearing and entered the forest. He did not see the eyes. He did not notice that he was being watched. He was unaware of the silent procession following him into the forest, toward the mountain, toward Chetaltok. Plateo moved quickly but quietly, not disturbing the branches reaching out toward his path. And even though Plateo did not look up, he followed the eagle, soaring just above and slightly to his left. No sign caused Plateo to follow the winged scout, except for the invisible cord uniting eagle and man. On he walked into the forest, still unaware of the congregation, growing in numbers behind him. It was not until Plateo glanced over his left shoulder that their presence was made known to him. He paused to assure himself of what he saw. Satisfied that he was leading a pack of many, Plateo slowed his progress, then quickened his pace. But no matter how slow or how fast he proceeded, the following throng remained approximately 6 or 7 feet behind him. He did not turn to confront his followers. Latejo knew one man could not stand against so many. So, Latejo simply decided to walk with them. Strangely, this gathering mass of animals was not unsettling to Latejo. He assumed his normal gait, and they followed. Latejo and the beings of nature moved along the corridors of ancient trees, passing under the towering canopy of rooted columns toward Chetaltoc. The number of those following Latejo increased until they were well into the hundreds, and their legions included bear, wolf, beaver, otter, snake, fowl of every description, mice and rats, raccoon, fox, mountain cats, possum, muskrat, deer, and every other creature who had ever passed over the land in and around the mountain. They returned to join the silent procession. Their passing made no sound. Their passing left no prints on the forest floor. When the eagle cut sharply, Latejo realized they were approaching Cave Chetaltoc. Latejo's eyes followed the eagle's flight upward until the bird came to rest on a ledge high above Latejo and the gathered throng. Then, as Latejo's gaze returned earthward, his eyes fell upon the opening of the cave. There was silence outside the cave. Nothing could be heard except the wind in the trees. Then, slowly, it began. First, as a murmur, came the sound from those gathered behind Latejo. The murmur grew to a chant. The one, the one, the one. The chant took on the spirit of its own and grew louder. The chant swelled to a cry that built in intensity until it reached a thunder that erupted into a tumultuous shaking sound that rattled the earth. Then the earth responded and cried out with a loud moan that reverberated up from its core and shook harder still the ground on which Latejo stood. And still the chant continued, the one, the one, the one. The chant did not subside until it moved into Latejo. Abruptly, Latejo threw back his head and cried out, Hite, Chetaltoc, Hite! At his command, the mountain heaved violently and its peak released a mass of snow and ice. The white wall crashed down the rocky precipice toward the source, toward Latejo, and the crowd gathered behind him. Latejo watched as the sheet of snow passed over his head. Then he turned to see the icy blanket settle over the earthly forms and release the spirits who had gathered to stand with man. They had come from every age and every parcel of land in and around the mountain to show their support for the one worthy of the secret. They had returned to pass the ancient chant to man so he would remember, so he would hear and know the power in the rocks and trees and earth and the creatures that pass over it and are part of it. Those gathered knew if Latejo was indeed the worthy one, his words would allow him to see and know. If Latejo was the worthy one, he would know he was one with all. Latejo had passed the test, so the spirits dispersed and rode with the passing snow. They returned to the rocks and trees and bushes populating the mountain, populating the avenues to Chetaltoc. They would not gather again for a very long time. Latejo held fast the sight as the avalanche gathered the assembly of spirits and carried them down the mountainside Then, just as quickly as it came, the avalanche was gone. The earth still trembled as Lateo's attention returned to the face of the mountain. The inside of the cave was throbbing, brilliant green shafts of light that radiated from within, as if Chetaltok was alive, as if Chetaltok was breathing. The streams of light reached out from the mouth of the cave. They reached out to the approaching Lateo and, standing in the entry portal, just to the right of the opening, was the spirit, Sabo. Sabo did not welcome Lateo to her world. Rather, she extended her right arm, directing him toward the mossy aisle and the belly of the cave. Sabo did not lead Lateo along the passage, but deferred to his passing before her, and all around could be heard the echoing plop Lateo associated with Chetaltok. Lateo did not wait. His step was sure. He did not hesitate to proceed toward the source of the light. He did not hear Sabo, but he knew she was just behind him, following his path, completing the presentation. Lateo and Sabo followed the light, and all along the passageway, the walls breathed in and out, and the plops resounded through the corridors as they entered the pools on the floor of the cave. The light of the cave grew richer and more pure as Lateo moved deeper into Chetaltok. Lateo's breathing adopted the same slow, steady inhalation and exhalation of the chambers of the cave as they breathed as one. The light beckoning Lateo intensified as he approached the archway. Lateo recalled that the passage led to a cavernous room, but when Lateo entered the open space, nothing else was as he remembered. The room was lit from within, and all portions of the cave were illuminated and bright with color and movement. The cave was full of life, and Lateo was breathing in tune with the life of the cave. For the first time since Lateo entered the mouth of the cave, Sabo presumed to direct him. She ushered him toward a single, large stone set in the floor of the cave. It was not a random rock of her selection. The piece of granite appeared carved and set in place for a purpose. When Lateo placed his foot up onto the surface of the rock, he noticed two indentations that were side by side and big enough to accept the foot of man. Lateo stepped up onto the slab and waited. At first, he was only aware of the comforting warmth flowing down from his neck, but when the energy became more isolated, Lateo knew that his necklace was generating this blanket of warmth. Lateo felt a tremor and looked down as two shafts of brilliant green light shot from the two emerald medallions suspended from the golden chain around his neck. When the rays crashed against the wall of the cave, Lateo came face to face with Chetaltok. Even standing on the platform of man, Lateo did not meet the eyes of Chetaltok. The face was vast, composed of the entire wall facing Lateo's elevated stance. The boulders comprising Chetaltok's eyes were the size of Lateo's head, and they peered down from the rafters of the cave in a sure, steady gaze that was thorough and searching. Lateo dared not move during the examination. He stared straight ahead and absorbed the face of inner earth, the face of Chetaltok. And even though the facial characteristics of Cheteltok were literally set in stone, there was movement. Lotejo did not see ears, but the rest of the face was similar to his own in structure and appearance. When Cheteltok spoke, it was slow and deliberate. The entire wall moved to accommodate his mouth. The words came in a stream of water, gushing over his lips, spilling out onto the floor surrounding Lotejo. At first garbled, the language of the cave soon became distinguishable. And with every sentence, Lotejo was less and less distracted by the water, and more attracted by the beauty of the sound that complemented the echoing drops and flowed with the timeless beauty that made his own speech rudimentary and clumsy in comparison. And, standing before Cheteltok, Lotejo was humbled by the intelligence of Earth. The words of Cheteltok were measured and laboriously delivered. "Lotejo, you have come into me as you were called. I show you my life." With that, Cheteltok laid bare himself to Lotejo and exposed his veins of gold and green and varying shades of red and blue. The colorful tributaries reached throughout the cave, weaving an intricate pattern, creating cavities for organisms, matting the frame of the cave, tying it together tighter and firmer with the passing of every age, revealing the underpinnings of the mountain, revealing the life of the earth. A gush of water leapt with the words of Cheteltok. "The pangs of birth do not diminish the gift of life, but bring to it the noble quality of sacrifice. Life is born of the tears of pain and joy. It is as noble in its being as it is in its creation. But nobler still is the one who knows the value of all life, that born of man and that born of earth. Just as the woman knows her time, so Cheteltok recognizes the contractions as the beginning. I can already feel the mountain's constricting tension. The time has come for my contribution, and in one mighty upheaval, I will sever the binding cords and release thousands of my children to upper earth. This I do freely for the good of all. But cursed be the man who enters my chambers and pulls the life from my veins and plunders my soul, for his fate will not be an enviable one." Lotejo's feet were awash in Cheteltok's watery words, but he dared not look down as the cave continued to speak. "Lotejo, you are the noble one. At your bidding, you are welcome. My treasures are yours. Wear the mark well and long. Now go. Do not travel to the east. Travel instead to the west, toward the setting sun. Walk on through the night. Do not stop to rest, even when you are shaken to your knees and the fires reach over your head. Do not stop until the tremors subside. Then you will be free to return. Then I will be at rest. Walk, man of spirit." Cheteltok's mouth stretched wider still and delivered the final words in a river that carried Lotejo from the inner chamber of the cave along the narrowing passageways, finally depositing him in a soaking heap just outside the entry portal. The mouth of the cave shuddered. Its pulsing green glow changed to burning red. Then, with a noise known only to Lotejo's ears, Chetltok slammed shut the rocky doors to inner Earth, and for a while, upper Earth was still. Latejo's hand reached up to touch the green medallions around his neck. They were still warm. Chetltok's words were still splashing about in his head as he walked away, and he began to tie the pieces together as he journeyed toward the setting sun. Latejo did as he was commissioned, and as the side of the mountain erupted toward the east, Latejo traveled west and did not stop until the quaking earth calmed. Then he slept two nights before beginning his journey home. It was on his way home that Latejo realized the effect of his encounter with Chetltok and the silent nobility of all life slipped more firmly into his life. Wherever he looked, he saw life. The rock was alive. The tree was alive. The dirt was alive. And Latejo was more alive than ever before. As Latejo came onto the eastern side of the mountain, the reality of the powerful eruption surprised him. Gray ash was everywhere, and huge boulders held new footings on the altered face of the mountain. Nothing was the same, and, for the first time in days, Latejo realized he was weary and longed for his tent and a good night's sleep. Thoughts of Sabo and Chetltok and the massive eruption faded in and out before sleep settled over Latejo. Spring gave way to a summer that bloomed brighter than ever before. It was the summer Latejo began his travels. It was the summer he embraced freedom. It was the summer the elders of his tribe, in their wisdom, recognized this trait, accepting it in a positive light. Latejo was soon tracking game alone. With the passing of years, Latejo's homecomings became less and less frequent. As Latejo eschewed group activities, preferring to be alone, preferring to talk to the trees and to the river and to Chetltok. Latejo traveled many miles, even to the great water and back. By the time Latejo was in his 30s, he gave up all pretense of being anything but a solitary sojourner. Latejo was completely unaware of his growing fame, and, with every report he carried back to the elders of what lay ahead, where herds were located, and where fish and game were plentiful, the stories of his travels began to take on the proportions of legend. But Latejo never stayed in camp long enough to learn of his fame. Although Latejo was alone most of the time, he was never lonely, and for those would-be apprentices who sought his advice, Latejo left no question unanswered. Latejo turned no seeker of truth away from his tent. Latejo lost no opportunity to speak on the nobility of life. But, for the most part, Latejo remained alone, moving silently ahead of the tribe, marking the way for the rest to follow. His path was sure and his sight unobstructed by pride or ego. Latejo's eyes were the eyes of the tribe, and Latejo's eyes were the eyes of Chetltok. Once a year, Lateo stood before the mountain and sounded the command. Hite, Chetaltok, hite! Once a year, the craggy portals creaked open to permit his entrance into the chamber of echoes and shadows. Once a year, Sabo and Chetaltok listened to the tales of Upper Earth. Once a year, Lateo was gifted with the treasures of Chetaltok and grew in wisdom. Once a year, to mark the occasion, Lateo placed a slab of granite on the growing altar at the entrance to the cave. The once-a-years lasted a very long time, and the conversations of Inner Earth grew lengthier with each passing year. But, as all things on Earth must do, the once-a-years came to an end. The ending came as no surprise to Lateo, and, as always, he was prepared when it was time. Lateo's body was wrapped in his blanket, and his hand, holding the gift of spirit, was tightly shut with strips of rawhide. Just before dusk, the tribe assembled and quietly followed Lateo, who preceded the tribal columns atop the shoulders of six village braves. They were deep in thoughts of Lateo when they left the clearing and entered the forest. They did not see the eyes. They did not notice they were being watched. They were unaware of the silent procession following them into the forest, toward the mountain, toward Chetaltok. Was quiet. The shadows were long, and the only words spoken were carried on the tongues of fire that leapt from the torches in the night. And as the advancing column followed the light along the corridors of ancient trees, down the aisle protected by the towering canopy of rooted columns, the silent procession to the rear paused and accepted the spirit of Lateo into the circle. The passing one's appearance, though similar to his earthly body, now shouldered solemnly by his people, was no longer restricted by skin. The molecular structure was not confined to a particular space. Rather, it appeared to be of body and of spirit. Lateo, in earthly death, became bigger than life. His footprints left no marks on the floor of the forest as he proceeded to Chetaltok between the parade of man and the gathering of spirit who stood with man on their approach to the mountain. And though no eye saw or could behold the sight in the dark of night, there flew above and just to the left of man and spirit a massive eagle, and at its wing flew the dove. When the column reached the mouth of the cave and stood at the foot of the mountain, the eagle did not cut and perch on high. The eagle took his place on top of the altar laid by the hands of Lateo and called for the dove. The dove responded to the call of the eagle and descended to join the great bird on the altar of man. Neither bird stirred when the earthly body of Lateo was placed between them. The eagle and the dove remained with the body of man while the torches were set in place surrounding the stone edifice at the foot of the mountain. Then, from behind the people of Lateo's tribe, from behind those who had followed his earthly body to this place, came the sound. At first, as a quiet murmur, it began. The murmur drifted into the night and surrounded the human throng. It lifted to the heavens, and chanted on the lips of spirit rose the ancient rhythm of the One, the One, the One. It rolled over the mountaintop and reverberated back to man. The spirit of Latejo moved with the wind and encompassed the mountain and whispered to the cave to open its doors to man. The spirits of the animal kingdom ceased the chant, and the spirit of Latejo hovered over his earthly remains. The quiet onlookers held their breath, and the eagle and the dove remained with man and spirit, and Cheteltok answered the call of the Son of Man and opened his doors to those who had followed Latejo. The earth shook as the mountain exposed itself to those who would look and see. Then there came the face of Cheteltok, embodied in the mountain. And when he opened his massive mouth to speak, the water flowed over the people, washing them in the words. And the people absorbed the words that were spoken by the benevolent mountain. Long into the night, the people sat at the foot of the mountain and were enlightened by that which was told to them. Cheteltok spoke to man and said, "Do not blemish the gift given freely by violating the donor. As woman willingly gives life to man, so too will the mountain give up something of value. But what is life? What is of value? If man, in his ignorance, untimely reaches into the woman and rips out the life of the womb, her blood will flow on his hands, and death will be his gift. Remember this, man cannot take that which is given freely without being greatly diminished in the act. Man cannot plunder the coffers of Mother Earth without bearing the mark of the thief. If, like the arrogant fool who kills the mother to take the child, man in his ignorance untimely reaches into the mountain and rips out the veins of its life, he will be plagued with the death of spirit, a death far more devastating than that of body. And his act will cripple the true growth of mankind, and the mountain will be pulled asunder for naught except death, the death of spirit. For as surely as man gives birth, spirit gives life. But the life of spirit is far more abundant than the life given by man. Spirit will provide gifts to man, to the wise and to the foolish. The wise man will see and know the gifts as they are. The fool will see only what his eyes tell him is the truth and be none the wiser for the gift." Cheteltok ceased speaking, and the mountain grew still. The delicate frame of the spirit Sabo could be seen within as the craggy portal of the cave creaked shut with a final crack that came from the sky in the form of a lightning bolt. The flash of light lit the entire assembly of man and spirit, showing them to be what they were. Some of the tribe, seeing the world of spirit in full, ran in terror from the spot. Some of the tribe, seeing the world of spirit in full, embraced the vision, stepped into the circle, and accepted the gift of spirit as it was freely given. The spirits gathered at the edge of the forest, embraced the soul of man, and left him with the gift of knowing, as they dispersed into the night, returning from whence they came. The only remaining spirit was that of Latejo, who beckoned his followers to draw closer to the altar of man set before the mountain. And in that silent night, those who were drawn to the altar ate of his wisdom, drank of his knowledge, and slept in peace. they woke, those faithful followers who had stayed with him after the others had fled found only the chain of gold bearing two emerald medallions atop the altar. Then, clearly, as if he was there in body, the voice of Leteo could be heard within each of their heads. It was not the spoken word of man, but the whispered word of spirit that Leteo passed to those who would follow him. It was his gift, and those who heard with spirit knew the wisdom in his words, and in accepting the words as truth, came to know the One. They stayed many days in the shadow of the mountain, listening to the words of Leteo, taking from him what was freely given, and eating of the bread of life from the hand of spirit. When it was time, Leteo sent them on their way, each to a different land, each with a different language, each with a different talent, each bearing the mark of Leteo, each wearing the gift of spirit given by Sabo. For the gifts of spirit, though one, will be many, as its gifts are ever increasing and its source boundless. As those marked by the teacher departed, each to different lands, there erupted from the base of the stones of Leteo a massive vine that curled around the altar in vice-like manner. Then, as those remaining observed, it crept over the altar and split into two arms of vine that wrapped around the base of the mountain, sealing shut the mouth of Cave Chetaltok. As the newborn, those washed in the waters of wisdom, left the mountain, walking into different lands, they pondered the events in their minds and grew in wisdom. They did not see the eyes. They did not notice that they were being watched. They were unaware that the eyes of Leteo were following them into tomorrow.